This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You give me one shot here on a blue chip stock. Believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're going to have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What's going on, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst, It's the Draft Deck NBA Draft Show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. My name is Corey Tulliba. I'm the NBA draft dude, and I am here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time. Gim, Albert, what's good, brother?
All is good. All is good. You know what's funny, Corey? We've been doing this pod for like 2 years now, and we always start off with the same question: how you doing, Albert?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, every single time I struggle to answer this question, and I feel like I'm sitting, you know, at my therapist's office and I'm supposed to give you something really deep, but I'm doing well and I'm ready to rock. It's the best I can give you today.
Anytime anybody could respond with "I'm ready to rock," it's the correct answer. Well, today, you know, we have an interesting prospect that we're going to cover, somebody that we didn't cover during the preseason. And if you go back onto the Draft Act feed and you listen to some of the preseason episodes, I think, you know, we kind of say, like, when we make reference of Dariq, like, we have some questions, and that's why we had put off his episode, and we, you know, wanted to get as much film as we possibly could on him this year. His season is now officially over, so it felt like the appropriate time to start to cover him. So Dariq Whitehead, Duke Blue Devils, freshman wing, very young, 18 years old this season. He is going to be 18.88 years old on draft night. He's listed at 6'6", 220. Didn't find a reported wingspan, but it definitely looks plus. This is where things get interesting with Dariq. He played 20.6 minutes per game this season, averaged 8.3 points per game, 2.4 rebounds a game, one assist to 1.4 turnovers, 0.8 steals, 0.2 blocks, shot 42.1% from the field, 42.9% from three, and 79.3% from the free throw line on one free throw attempt per game. True shooting percentage of 54.8, PER 14.1, BPM of 3.9. Now, some preseason draft stock for Dariq. ESPN had him at 11, SB Nation had him at 8, Basketball News had him at 7, The Athletic had him at 10, Tankathon had him at 18, No Ceilings at 4, Sports Illustrated at 6. He had an average price of 7, came in at 6 on the DraftDAC IPO. Currently, ESPN has him at 24, The Athletic at 23, Tankathon at 26, Bleacher Report at 18, The Ringer at 24, No Ceilings at 26, Swish Theory at 16, average price of 22.4. He ranked number 20 on the February DraftDAC update. We will be releasing the March update soon, and that's probably about where he's going to come in on the next iteration of that. So, average price 22.4. Albert, is Dariq Whitehead stock price too high, too low, or is it just right?
So on my latest big board, on my own personal big board, I had him at 23. So if I were going off of that, I would say just about right. The issue is, due to us recording this pod, I went even deeper. and I watched this tape a little bit more, and I ended up a little bit lower than where I thought I was. So if I gave you my honest answer in terms of where I am right now, I would say 22 is a little bit high for my taste. But if I go back, if I give you an answer based off of what my latest big board said, then it would be just right, which is a really nice little preview into what I'm going to be sounding like during this pod.
You know, what's interesting is I kind of came away with the opposite impression, in that I walked away a little bit higher on Derek than I was. Now, to be fair, I was pretty low on Derek through most of the process, and I think a lot of it stemmed from the fact that I wasn't super high on him coming into the year, even though I understood why somebody might be. I just had questions. Now, did Derek answer those questions this year? He did not, but there are some circumstances that may have led to, you know, the weird season. He dealt with a lower body injury that, you know, he missed a lot of the preseason. He came in, was trying to find his rhythm. We talked about how he's already so young. And then to have to come in on top of the youth to, you know, kind of find your footing in the middle of ACC play is going to be tough for anybody, let alone somebody who's making the jump from high school to college. And on top, he looked a little bit heavy this year, you know, and I think with a lower body injury, I think you could chalk that up a little bit to the fact that it was probably hard for him to, you know, work on his conditioning, given the nature of the injury. And then, you know, he had another little, you know, setback injury wise, later on in the year. He came back, it was really shaky early on. And, but I think ultimately going back through the film, just, and I guess where I say I ended up a little higher, it depends on where you're at. If you're somebody who thinks that Derek is maybe the guy who he was projected to be in the preseason, I'm out. And to me, that I'm lower, yeah, you know, yeah. But if he's a guy that maybe you can look at and be like, well, maybe he's going to play a role, something that he did do at Montverde when he wasn't the man, then maybe I could find myself being a little bit higher on him. But I would say it's probably just right. And well, I don't know if I could get there. I would understand if somebody's taking a swing on him backish end of the lottery through the 20th pick. I would get it. I don't know if I'm there, but I get it.
Sure. Sure. And I get that, Corey. And I think ultimately what you just mentioned is going to weigh heavily in a lot of different areas of his game. It had a big effect on his offensive game, the defensive game, like all over. So I really do think, depending on the evaluator, depending on the front office, depending on how they weigh all those factors. And yeah, I think the median outcome can be him going in, like, you know, late teens, early 20s easily, because of exactly what you said. And I think it really does come down to, Corey, what you said about the lens, right? What lens are you viewing his game through? Are you looking for a top 10 guy? Then I think you and I are very emphatically going to be out on him being a top 10 guy. However, if you're looking at him in a more defined role, as a supporting guy, as a guy who can play second fiddle, third fiddle, and be okay with that, then obviously the narrative and our perception of him is going to change pretty drastically. So I'm there with you, man. I 100% agree. And I'm excited to get into the nitty-gritty of what he's about.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that all that's left is to start getting into a little bit of the film, because, you know, I think, well, on the surface, Derek's role was very limited this year, and I honestly think that worked to his benefit, especially given the context of his situation. But given that, I do think we can go fairly deep into the player he is. So I do have some high school tape. I do have, you know, a lot of the college tape. So, you know, we might go back and forth, mostly relying on the college stuff. But I mean, where are we starting?
I would like to start with the shooting. And the reason why is because I had like a lot of questions that I wanted to throw at you as I did the deep dive of his shooting. I think there were so many different variables that went into why he looked the way that he did. But then also, like, it's funny, Corey, you were going over like the raw numbers and him just shooting 43% from three this season on like 3.5 right per game or something is not freaking bad. So I'd like to start there. I had some questions.
All right, so I think when we get into the shooting, like you said, 40, you know, plus percent from three, and when he came into the year, you know, early on, it he wasn't shooting it that well. So, you know, he really came on towards the end of the year. Some numbers: 44% on catch and shoot shots, 51.4% on unguarded catch and shoot shots per synergy. But this year he was really just a spot up guy. You know, he had some reps, maybe shooting at a pick and roll here and there.
So he had some reps shooting. Sorry, guys. I think Corey may have disconnected here. We'll be right back. But just to kind of continue off of what Corey was saying, I think, you know, he was mostly just kind of shooting off the catch. And, oh, Corey's back.
I'm back. Okay. Sorry. So I don't know what happened. I got disconnected. So, you know, as I was saying, he mostly spot up, some self-creation, but for the most part, it was a very simplistic shot diet. And I think that was really beneficial for him, because I think if he proved anything, it's that this dude can really knock down shots off the catch. And if we're looking at him from the context that he can come in and play a simplistic role as a role player off of other stars, I think that there's a lot of reason for optimism, because we know that shooting is a premium in the NBA, and clearly he's pretty damn good at it, right? So I mean, this is a pretty heavily contested shot. I gave the numbers: 51.4% on unguarded shots, 44% overall per synergy. This is it's pretty smooth, man. And you know, shooting it confidently, hand in his face, letting it fly, and that corner spacing, I think, could be really valuable.
So, Corey, for me, watching him shoot, watching his makes, it looks good. It really does. As you mentioned, it looks pretty. It's fluid, looks repeatable, all that stuff. My issue when I was watching, maybe it's not even an issue, but when I was watching him miss, I had a lot of questions about a couple of things. So the first thing that I wrote in my notes was on a lot of his misses, I felt like, so when he's making his shots, it seems like he's, you know, really set, really balanced going up. And then when he lands too, I feel like he comes down on both feet and it looks really good. On a lot of his misses, I felt like he was landing on one foot and kind of doing like the hopping thing afterwards. And I was wondering if that was like a body contortion thing with his shot at the top. And then like, as he was landing, was something happening there? Another question that I had was, I felt like sometimes like that guide hand, instead of being at the side of the ball, I thought was kind of at the front of the ball. And I was, so this was a question for you, wondering what type of effect that has on the shot, if any at all. So yeah, let's start there. I had another question to follow up, but could we start there? Was my question?
For me, the difference between his makes and misses are like the elevation that he gets.
Okay.
Like a lot of times I feel like on his misses, he's like kind of flat footed. He's not shooting in rhythm. He's not shooting on the hop. He's not shooting off of 1-2. It's just kind of like barely getting any, you know, elevation and not generating a lot of power. And he shoots like a really high arcing ball So for me, that's the first problem. His hands can get wonky too. Mm-hmm. There's some inconsistencies when he's like not shooting it confidently. When he's missing it, it does look like, has this guy ever shot the ball before? Right? Like, but when it looks good, a lot of that is kind of eradicated. So I do wonder sometimes, because there was more consistency in high school, and obviously, like, that's a step below. So it's going to look better at that level for a guy like him. But I do wonder, you know, like, if a lot of the inconsistencies with his shot was just like trying to catch up to the speed of the game and figuring out how much space he needed, how much time, and if he can go through his full release. I mean, you know, this one actually, like, it looks a little bit smoother than some of his misses that he gets decent elevation. It's just some of his misses, he really clanks, you know, like he just doesn't always show a ton of touch, like as soft as it looks when it goes in. But at the end of the day, it got to a point throughout the season where I almost felt like if he was spotting up, you know, and this one is off movement and he didn't do a ton of that at Duke this year, but going back through the film, he did a little bit more of that, at Montverde. I felt like the shots were going to go in when it left his hand. So, like, I mean, it's hard to kind of react too much, and think that he doesn't have like the movement stuff in his bag as well. And a lot of it is just like him getting used to his heavier body. I don't know. I think there was a lot of factors as to why some of the misses looked clunky, even though I do think that some of the misses were self-inflicted just based on maybe some of the shots that he isn't really that capable of knocking down consistently.
Yeah, no, that was another thing that I wrote down here. I felt like sometimes his shot selection was kind of nightmarish. I thought at times that he really kind of sped himself up, but I think, Corey, like you mentioned, that could just be an adjustment type of thing where he was getting adjusted, as you mentioned, right, to his body, adjusted to his injury whole situation, right, coming back from that, the college game. It just, once again, like, as I was watching him shoot, it just felt like there are so many different factors that were playing into what we were watching. I also felt like sometimes, Corey, on his misses, that it felt like he was shooting on the way down. Was another thing that I noticed that it's pretty common, something that you see kind of all the time. I mean, that was kind of one of my critiques with Quentin Grimes when he's coming out. I felt like at times he was shooting on the way down. So it's not something that can't be fixed. It's just, I don't know, the more I watched it, the more I felt like it felt like a lot of adjusting to different things. And Corey, another thing is off the dribble, it just was really hard to watch for me at times. So yeah,
I like the point about him kind of shooting on the way down, or they're kind of like, even on this clip, and Julian Phillips, very good defender. He's kind of all over him. He's got a lot of length. And this is kind of, you know, show some of the self creation, like, inefficiencies that he has, but he kind of, like, at his peak, I don't know if he's shooting on the way down necessarily, but he's pausing at his peak instead of like letting it fly. Like in one motion, there's like a slight, it's not a hitch necessarily, but it's like a delay. And that's when you mentioned Quentin Grimes. Grimes has that sometimes, and it kind of leads to a lot of the times it's like it ends up short or whatever. And you're just like a 0.1 second quicker on the release, it'd be cash. So I do think that there's something to that. And then when he does get a little bit too creative, that's when, you know, we start to go, I don't know about this. And I think it mostly, I don't think there was a lot from behind the arc this season, because he didn't have that freedom like he did at Montverde. But when he got into some of the mid-range stuff, it was just like, that, man, this, what are we doing?
Corey, this was the exact play that I highlighted, that I wrote down in my notes that I wanted to go over. For me, it was just, look who's guarding him. Like, no disrespect to this guy, but I don't know. Just watching this, I was like, man, he's really struggling to create separation to get by him. And this is a tough shot, and it doesn't look very pretty. He doesn't look comfortable at all. A couple chicken wings thrown in there too. And I'm just like, I wasn't very excited.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, Virginia players are usually pretty strong defenders fundamentally. Yeah. The guard's doing a good job moving his feet.
Yeah.
But ultimately, and I don't know if you want to chalk it up to Derek just doesn't have the burst because of the injury, or you want to chalk it up to he doesn't have the creativity with his handle, which I think is kind of the big problem with him, is that his handle's really loose. So when we're talking about him as a self-creator, self-generator, a guy who could be a three-level scorer, it's kind of concerning. And he just, you know, on this specific play, like he's got to settle for this weird turnaround and it's ugly. And it's this play in particular, it's not like the shot clock's expiring. It's a bad shot. And, you know, we've seen, and this is recent, you know what I mean? It's not even like we could chalk this up to him trying to find his footing, coming into the year of returning from the injury, right? So I think, one, his court awareness as well, like even on this, which is, you know, a fairly simple shot, he's not dancing with the ball, he's not doing a whole lot, it's one step inside the three-point line and settling for a really highly contested shot. And it's just like, one, I think those are going to be eliminated at the next level, because I don't think he's going to be this crazy bucket getter who just is given the keys. There's too much talent in the league. There's too many guys, even if he gets drafted, you know, towards the 20s, that are going to have that role. But for me, if he does eliminate these and he sticks to his strength, which is shooting the three ball, you know, off the catch, I think there's a legit path for him. And even when he keeps it simple, like it, for me, like he should have like king of the court principles, where it's like, if I can't do something in three dribbles or less, I shouldn't do it. Right. Like this is pretty nice.
Yeah.
You know, like this was recent, from the tournament, he faces up on the right wing, a little jab step, and just to create a little bit of space and knockdown, shooting it confidently. And he looked pretty confident in some of these games in the tournament and towards the end of the year. Like, he's a keep it simple, stupid kind of player for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but also, Corey, like, I just want to come back just watching this clip right now. Like, look at his balance. Like, he feels so much more balanced coming off this shot. And that's the thing with me that bothers me so much when I watch him come off the dribble. When he starts to create off the dribble and shoot off the dribble, his feet just go. Like, he does not have the same balance at all. And I feel like a lot of that can be from that lack of lower body strength right now, whether it's he's just always kind of been like a weaker guy. Once again, that he's landing so balanced there. But it I just feel like whether it's the injury or he's just got to get stronger in his lower half, when he's coming off the dribble, a lot of times that balance is just not there. His feet are all over the place, and he just without his feet under him, it's hard to have the stability and the consistency to hit these shots all the time. And you talked about it, Corey, off the dribble too, like the creativity's not there. He doesn't have a lightning quick first step. As you mentioned, I don't want to use the word pudgy, but he did add some weight here, and it doesn't look like he added like muscle, but he did just kind of add a little bit of weight. And I think all that matters. And I feel like, you know, when you don't have that balance under you and you don't have that type of creation ability, then you are going to get some pretty gnarly looking misses like you've shown.
Yeah. But I mean, 43%. Yeah, it comes down to the shots started going in at a high clip. And this is another, like, I think he is going to be a guy who can run some basic pick and roll. Now, his handle, we mentioned, is pretty loose. And something I noticed, which I'm not sure why coaches were game planning on having their guards go under screens with Derek, but they consistently did, and I don't know why. I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case at the next level, especially because when we get into some of like the in-between stuff, and the rim attacking stuff, I don't love it, but just judging his shooting base, like you said, balanced, lands with both feet at the same time. The shot is moving synergistically. There's no hitch or pause at the top.
Right.
And it looks smooth. I mean, dead on. Bam. So, I don't think I can deny that the dude can shoot the rock, and if he could shoot the rock, it's a valuable skill. And while he is maybe a little heavy, the dude's frame pretty legit.
Yeah.
For an 18-year-old kid with length, I mean, that thing's going to fill out. And I mean, there's a lot to, you know, potentially talk yourself into with a guy like Derek. And, you know, there's a reason why he was so highly heralded coming in. And again, I don't think he's that player necessarily, but you don't get ranked that high for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but Corey, like this exact clip that you're showing right now is that's the stuff that'll get people thinking, right? That'll get people dreaming like, oh,
gift and a curse. This clip's a gift and a curse.
100%. Because like this for me was not the norm for him. Like anytime he started dribbling, like as I was going through his film, every time he took like more than two or three dribbles, I'm like, okay, what type of clank am I getting here? Or is it going to be all air? This is not the norm. But at the same time, like the other side of the coin is like you start thinking, hey, if this is in his bag, then what's his ceiling looking like, right? It's how people may interpret this type of move. So I'm with you 100%, Corey. And then also my issue with him that you brought up is like just sometimes the time, like sometimes there's like 15 to 20 seconds left on the clock and he's taking like crazy contested shots. The one that you showed before with Isaiah Wong all over him, for me, what stuck out to me was Isaiah Wong wasn't even worried about him blowing by him. He was all up in his space and was like, dude, like you can try whatever move you want to. I'm going to be right here. And he wasn't phased at all and was all up in his airspace. And I was like, okay, so Isaiah Wong has been watching tape and he knows that Derek Whitehead isn't going to blow by him. And for me, like I just feel like NBA defenders, they're gonna read that and be like, hey kid, you can dribble all you want, but if you're not taking a corner three-point shot, I'm gonna lock you down, is what I think a lot of pro defenders are gonna say.
I mean, I tend to agree. I think a lot of times when he starts dribbling, he doesn't know what he's gonna do. He's trying to improvise, and I mean, especially in college where there's a lot of times a cramped court, like you can get yourself in trouble. And this is kind of the next aspect as to why he's fallen down boards, why there's a little bit reason to worry. And again, I went back and watched a lot of Montverde film today. And a lot of the signs were there that in this little in-between area, he just doesn't really have a lot of touch. Now he's got the confidence and the pedigree to get these shots off, but there's a difference in somebody who can get these shots off and somebody who can make them. And at the NBA level, NBA coaches who value their jobs want guys who are going to make them, not take these. And part of it is why I think there's a lot of struggles. And I mean, this is kind of like an awkward jumper. And again, Miami's athletic team, Isaiah Wong is, you know, guy moves well, he's strong, he's long. He's just afraid of contact. And I think that shows up in the one free throw attempt per game that he's taken. And a lot of that, again, he's spotting up. But he just doesn't, you know, he doesn't go to the rim. He shies away from contact. That's kind of, and a lot of people are like, he's injured this year, and that's why he lost a lot of the bounce and why maybe the finishing is kind of bad. But I just think it's one, the touch, and two, it's the him being adverse to seeking out contact. And you know, we'll show some Montverde clips too, positive and negative. I think his bounce was kind of overrated. Like a lot of people want to talk about him as if he was like high school AJ Griffin, who was like kind of a guy who was recklessly jumping in the air with like just reckless abandon. Derek wasn't really like that. Like he had a few posters, but they were more so few and far between. And when he had like a ton of runway to really go and get up. But him being a guy who consistently shied away from that contact is kind of his defining feature when he's attacking the rim to me.
Corey, in terms of him as a vertical athlete, it reminded me so much of Shabazz Muhammad when he was in high school. The reason why I bring that up is if you go back and watch any of those Ball is Life hoop mixtape videos of Shabazz Muhammad, the first 3 minutes of every one of his mixtapes was him doing some sort of like between the legs dunk or windmill, like during like pregame warmups and stuff. And like there was this weird misconception that Shabazz Muhammad was like going to be a good athlete, and he just wasn't. And watching Derek Whitehead, I was like, dude, this guy is not getting up like at all. There were a couple where he just had like a free runway to the rim and he just completely clanked it and missed dunks because he wasn't getting high enough. And I get it. Once again, like there's an easy excuse that people are going to use. He had a lower half injury, but my thing is like, it didn't look like that was the whole story. Like, I think this is the one right here.
Yeah.
It's like just completely
a big moment too.
Yeah, exactly.
Dukes up one on a breakaway with a minute left against Boston College.
And there was another one too with like free.
He like the ball like flew out of the air. Yeah, it was. It didn't even get like it wasn't even considered a dunk like in like Synergy's system or Instat or whatever because it like ended up being kind of looking crazy. but. I'm worried about that. I am. I'm worried about him being overrated. And I think when people talk about his high school tape, they look at moments like this, where open side of the court, a couple of dribbles, and throws it down. Grady Dick is there. He's not afraid of Grady Dick contesting at the rim, right? Like. Sunrise against Sunrise Christian catches on the left wing, beats his guy off the bounce, and gets up. And when you pause it at its peak, Derek he's got his head at the rim, right? This is a powerful dunk. I mean, you pause it right there.
Looks sick.
It looks sick, right? Like, but it's a little bit of fool's gold because he's not constantly attacking downhill with a head of steam with an empty runway. And if you want to talk about how that is what he was like in high school, but ignore, you know, clips like this where he's trying to go up, under, and through and avoid contact, not go into it. You know, like this is in transition. He's got a runway. You know, like, hey, I know Jairus Walker's there and we love Jairus as a defender. He is an intimidating man. I would probably do the same thing. But for somebody who we're trying to figure out if this is something to be concerned about or not, right? Like with a high ranking prospect, I want that guy to try to like put one through you. Another play against IMG. Tries to go high off the glass, doesn't want to draw contact. And like doesn't even hit the rim here going to his left. So, you know, these are high school clips where you go, all right, well, a lot of this looked similar in college. You know, like this isn't unique. It wasn't necessarily the injury. This is kind of what he was like at Duke. I mean, you know, we'll see it here. He just has like bad touch and he doesn't want to be aggressive all the time. This is early in the season, so maybe you could chalk it up to that. I just see a pattern and that's why I'm concerned with you know this aspect of his game.
No, I mean, Corey, I literally could not agree with you anymore. I will say though that there were some times, like when he had said runway, that you know I felt like the touch wasn't terrible. He had a couple left hand finishes where I was like, oh, all right, like cool, not bad. But overall, like I'm with you. Like it just the lack of the vertical pop, also the desire to avoid all that contact, like even that up and under one that you showed before, like he wasn't very high off the ground. Like here's the one that, yeah, he made left hand finish. This was pretty popular on Twitter, right? A couple months ago. But like, yeah, he had a couple good left hand finishes, but overall, like if you're always veering away from contact, then yeah, you're going to have some trouble finishing. And I don't have much to add to it, Corey, because like the vertical pop is not what it was advertised to be. And him just avoiding contact like that is just always going to make it more difficult. I don't think he has the worst touch around the rim. He did flash it at times, but overall, like it wasn't much to write home about. Like some of the stuff, like just from like the 3-4 clips you showed before, those are hideous, man. Those are like actually really, really bad. So
they're concerning.
I think sometimes you just got to call it as it is.
But I think this clip where he's, you know, kind of coming off like a quick pitch, you know, handoff, type action from the sideline where, you know, and if he's going to be spacing the floor, that's going to be where he's starting sets. I think this is how he gets downhill and is able to take advantage of it in a way that's beneficial for a team where you kind of got him attacking with momentum so he doesn't have to, you know, blow by his defender off a first step or whatever. Right. And he could use some of that downhill momentum to maybe, you know, get to the rim a little bit more efficiently. I mean, he had moments for sure, you know, like I think this one set, you know, Twitter on fire because it was like, this is when his first game, I think that he was really cooking. And you know, he put somebody on a poster. This is one of his two dunks on the year. And he only had two dunks. So, you know, at a guy with his size, with his measurements, his length, and again, lower body injury. So chalk it up to that. I'm sure he'd have more if, you know, he came in fully healthy. And this is the kind of stuff where you go, okay, like little cross, like smooth, little space, but you know, end of the second half in a blowout too. So not the most competitive team in college basketball. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. But these are the kind of things that are going to get people going like, that's the Derek I knew. And to be honest, I just don't think that's the real Derek.
I mean, that's the trouble with highlight culture, Corey. We've been talking about it this whole podcast. Like if you want to nitpick, then you can nitpick. If you want to, you know, over aggrandize certain things, and that's going to happen too. Like if you just pull that clip in a vacuum and just say, look at this. Then yeah, you're going to get excited. But Corey, you just said it yourself, like, look at the score, look at the time. He was feeling himself in this game. He's got more confidence. He feels more, you know, he wasn't really afraid for who was waiting for him at the rim. Then yeah, he's going to try different things. But we're talking about the NBA. Like this is now the 1% of basketball. And I think it's crazy to think that he's going to do that on the next level on a consistent level. And I really do think, Corey, like someone might even say, like, bro, like Jalen Williams didn't have that many dunks in college. Like, but look what he's doing now in the league. It's like, it's not comparable. We're talking about two completely different players. And Corey, just going back to your point, I know he's measured at 6'6", but for me, I thought he looked even smaller. I thought he was.
You think so?
Yeah, and this could just be me. I thought he looked closer to like 6'5", which is only an inch. Jesus, relax, Albert. But
he's listed at 6'7" on Duke's website.
Okay. Yeah. Thought he looked a little smaller.
I'm not seeing 6'7". If he was 6'5", I wouldn't be totally shocked because I think that a lot of guys that are listed at 6'5" are probably more like 6'3.5", 6'4". But I do think he looks like he's got pretty good size on him to the point where I'm like, for an 18-year-old with, you know, at the height and the length, I'm not concerned. Now, this is the last thing I want to talk about regarding his finishing before we kind of move on to an area of his game where I was like pleasantly surprised. And it's something that I wish I saw a little bit more often, but an area where I think that you could really, he can really do some damage based off of, you know, when he loses guys off the ball. I want to see him take advantage of like cutting more often off the ball, you know, and I know that, you know, maybe based on his role, him being, you know, probably the best floor spacer that Duke had, like, you know, maybe they don't want him doing it all the time, but any opportunity that he can get where he can kind of, you know, get easy points, I think that he needs to do it. So I don't know. I want to see more movement cutting off the ball. And I think we saw a little bit more of that at Montford. So it could just be role dependent, but ultimately, you know, something I'm looking for.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, Corey. And really quickly, just like you could tell he doesn't really trust his lower half here in this clip too, just with the way.
Yeah, he doesn't get elevation.
Exactly. And he's like, even the way he lands, like that's what I look like right now, you know, coming down from a layup, you know? So I get it. I totally understand.
Yeah. But what I will say is I kind of was pleasantly surprised by his playmaking and his passing. And when you look at the number.
Yeah.
You go one assist, negative assist to turnover ratio, right? Like, what are you actually getting excited about? But when I look at his role and think, all right, he's not going to be a high usage guy, but can he take advantage of certain situations and, you know, kind of make plays based off his strengths? I kind of got a little bit encouraged. You know, this is pretty easy, but attack the closeout, get into the paint, hit your roll, man. It's, there's nothing super complicated here, but guys are going to run out at him. And, you know, he does a nice job of kind of right before the help in the paint, he avoids the charge and, you know, he's able to dump it off and get his big and an easy bucket.
Yeah. No, Corey, I'm with you. It was kind of baffling at times to see like how he struggled so much with like court awareness when he had the ball in his hands. And then like you see a play like this where, as you mentioned, like he kind of executes it perfectly. I wanted to throw in a PS, though. Watching Derek and like a lot of the points he scored, I was like, damn, Mark Mitchell's like throwing dimes like pretty consistently. I was like really happy with how many of Derek's wide open looks were coming from Mark Mitchell, like, you know, skip passes and stuff. And I was like, damn, that's pretty nice. But yeah, I'm with you. His passing was definitely better than I thought it was going to be.
And when I look at passing, I look a lot of like little nuanced stuff. And like, I think this is a good example here. You know, he kind of gets blitzed a little bit, hard hedged, and, you know, Lively misses because the big recovers back to him in time. And Derek's handle is a little sloppy, but like he's tall and strong. So he's not going to necessarily get like moved, and he doesn't panic when guys come at him, and he places the ball really high where Lively can catch it high. Lively brings it down, which is one of the reasons I think he doesn't get an easy basket here. But I really liked the, you know, the ball placement overall and just kind of like the pace and the feel a lot of times. Now, don't get me wrong. There are, you know, he had more turnovers than assists. So there were times where it did look like a little bit sped up, like he was premeditated in what he was going to do. But ultimately, I think there was a lot of reason to actually be encouraged by some of the plays he was capable of making, whether that was like fitting passes into like a tight window in transition, which like this is a pretty nifty pass,
yeah,
you know, in stride, good ball placement, good timing, and the like, I don't know, it's, there's something there, and it comes back to he doesn't have the handle to kind of carry the load of being like a high usage creator, and when he does do that, he more often than not is kind of looking to, you know, score. But when I look at him in the context of like how he could be used at the next level, passes like this where he's kind of coming off like a little Miami action and is able to like make plays again, great pass to his role man.
There's something
there. Catches high, you know, or throws the ball high for his big, mm-hmm. so he can catch high and you know, go straight up. There's something there.
No, it's good touch. It's really good touch on this play. I just feel like, yeah, like Corey, I think the point you made, though, you kind of threw that in there, but it's the handle really kind of betrays him at times. And even if this type of vision and this ability is there, I just feel like sometimes like he just can't get the ball straight and situated where he can throw these types of passes. And so if he can just tighten up that handle, I think that'll really help him on so many different levels on the offensive side of the ball. But I'm not going to argue with you. Like, this was an aspect of his game that I wrote in my notes, too. I was like, some decent looks here.
And for me, I think with his handle, it's the left hand. When he's getting to his strong hand downhill, and maybe this is something that, you know, an offense will utilize where you can put him in actions where he's driving, you know, down the middle with a strong hand. The pacing is much better. He's much more confident. You could see like the hesitations, a little pound dribble, like, like, you know, he didn't get an assist here, but it's a beautiful shot created for Jeremy Roach. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny that, you know, we've gone 40 minutes on Derek's offense when his role was so limited this year. But I think when we look at him from an NBA draft perspective, there is a little bit of creativity and imagination that you need to kind of bring to the table, right? Like, so we have to dissect a lot of little things and the little micro details. Yeah. And you're either going to buy into some of those flashes, or you're going to kind of be a believer in the more overarching theme is that maybe he wasn't capable of contributing more. I mean, look, for as good as he was, 43% from three, he shot lower than that overall.
Yeah.
So you know, like the finishing concerning, the in-between stuff, whether it's floater, whether it's the mid-range shots, the shot selection. There's a lot of stuff that you kind of got to be like, look, man, I know that you were the guy at Montverde your senior year, but we need you to be the guy who maybe you were your sophomore and junior year. And if he buys into that, I do think that there's something pretty interesting there.
But Corey, ultimately the point that you're making that I think needs to be kind of, you know, brought up again is we're talking about a guy with like pretty serious pedigree. You know, he's a Montverde guy, highly touted coming into college, high expectations. And of course, like we're going to have to get into why he had the season that he had. I mean, he averaged 8 points a game. Mm-hmm. Like that's just not what people were expecting. And coming into college, he was kind of like a consensus top 10 guy. And then he had the season that he did. And now when we look at his future outlook, right, and the type of player that we can kind of envision him being in the NBA is just not that player. And yet we don't want to go so far because we're just not there where we'd start saying like, oh, the guy's going to be bad. Like, I just think we just have to kind of recalibrate our expectations for the type of player that he's going to be. And when you start to recalibrate and you see who he actually is and what his real strengths and weaknesses are, then you can have a more objective conversation. But once again, just coming from where he came and, you know, with the pedigree that he had, I think people definitely had some higher expectations for him.
Yeah, 100%. Shout out to everybody watching live on YouTube. Unhandy Train says RIP. I don't know if that's a comparison to Rip Hamilton when we were talking about the movement shooting. I don't know.
No, that came on when you dropped out for a second.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay. All right. That was when I lost connection. Reg Dallas says, how do you feel about Derek being a Tim Hardaway Jr. type of player? We're going to get into our comps a little bit later in the show. I don't personally have him as a Tim Hardaway Jr. In my comps. I don't know if you do, Albert, but I could see that path for him. Gregory Castillo says, watching Derek makes me want to go watch old Daniel Ewing film. So interesting name right there. Again, if you're watching live, appreciate you rocking with us. Make sure you hit the like button while you're here. And if you're listening to this post live recording on Spotify or Apple or your podcast platform, thank you for being with us. Let's transition to his defense. What were your overall impressions about him on that side of the ball? Because he does have pretty good physical tools to be a defender.
Yeah. So yes, Corey, he does have the physical tools to be a good defender. The problem is, like, most of what I watched was bad. Was what I have to say that. And I don't want to be like really harsh, but like, okay, some of my early notes here, like, caught flat-footed a lot. Like, a lot of him just moving around the court super flat-footed, wasn't really happy about it. Didn't love some of the off-ball stuff. Sometimes mm-hmm. he was like completely zoning out, where he has a moment where he looks back to the corner, his man is gone, and you see him have like a mini panic attack.
All right, let's pull that one up.
Okay, sure.
I don't know. I don't even, you know, to be fair, I don't even know. And before we go into that one, you know, the clip that's been playing on the stream is Turk kind of blew by him at will. Yeah. And, you know, he didn't necessarily make him pay that often, but he was able to blow by him all the time, going back to how heavy footed he could be at times.
I think there's something going on. I think Duke Shire is like just absolutely hacking our system and doesn't want us to bash on Derek. Here we go.
Maybe that goes back to him being heavy footed.
Yeah.
Let me pull up him losing his man off the ball again. I don't know if this was the same possession that you were thinking of, but he literally just is like, there's like a 4 second gap where he loses the shooter against Iowa. This is early on in the year, so, you know, him catching up to the speed of the game, not realizing like, oh, I can't do this again because these are college players who are going to hit these shots. It's not me at Montverde.
But Corey, I have to say, like, that's okay, but he did it against Tennessee too. So in that Tennessee game, he had one where he was completely lost. And I was like, come on, bro. Like, this can't be a big, like, because Corey, this is what I was thinking. you and I on this pod, we say this line a lot where we're like, hey, you know, their kids are 18. They're going to lose people off ball, which is like, which then made me think like, okay, if that's the standard we're going to set, where if you're like 20 and under and we're just going to allow you to be bad off ball, then the guys who are good off ball really deserve like the fucking Nobel Prize or something, because some of these guys are terrible. And I thought Derek really struggled off ball at times. And even his screen navigation stuff, I'm like, sometimes he's competing and he's getting around, and sometimes he's literally just trying to barrel through guys, or he's like so shocked by the screen.
He'll get stuck like, a lot. He gets stuck a lot.
Really bad, dude. So wanted to highlight that a little bit.
Yeah, this is kind of the good and the bad, because he does kind of get hit by the screen and like he should be stepping over and kind of cheating it, but he is here able to kind of recover. And I think this is kind of where I'm at with him, like at least on the ball, is that he kind of has to, like, I don't think he's going to be good on quick guards, mm-hmm. on like quick shifty guards. He's a guy to me more so that I'm going to want to see guard up positionally, because he is a little bit heavy footed. And I think that, you know, if he can kind of guard some of the bigger guys who aren't as quick, that's going to be beneficial for him. This possession here, you know, like he was that Jordan Miller, I think, like mm-hmm. on Miami. He does a good job of like getting back in the play, and he uses that. You see his length here, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. he's fighting. He's yeah, giving effort, contest, right?
Yeah.
You know, good contest. You know, there's another possession that I'm going to pull up to highlight against Jordan Miller, where it's actually Jordan Miller makes the shot, tough shot mm-hmm. by him. So good job by Jordan Miller, yeah. but it's good. It's ultimately like good defense. I mean, you know, that's mm-hmm. good contest, but it's like a
six shot,
great shot. But it's
like him,
but it's slow. Yeah. He's got yeah. He's got some shit to him.
Mm-hmm. Side note, sorry, but yeah.
He's got some shit to him. Yeah. But like, you know, there are also times where he's like really undisciplined. He reaches a lot. Like he gambles, you know, and he's got like decent steal numbers, steal percentages, but he does tend to just kind of like, let me reach in and like try to create a play rather than, like just play positionally and sound. So you could tell, you could kind of see the youth there. We have to remember he is only 18 years old. He's, you know, he's very young for the class. But I think ultimately what we're talking about, whether it's on the ball, off the ball, there's a lot of stuff that he does have to fix. Like even here, he makes the right rotation, and don't get me wrong, that's a big boy coming down the lane here. But he, again, back to that kind of, him being adverse to physicality, doesn't even make a play to kind of contest on the ball. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of soft. That's the kind of stuff at the NBA level.
Yeah.
You're sitting on the bench. You're sitting on the bench.
That's some Cam Reddish type of stuff. But no, I'm
shots fired.
Hey, there's a reason why he didn't play for Tibbs, okay? But I will say this, Corey. I just, you know, I brought this up before, but like watch his bad clips, man. Like 98% of them, he's just completely flat-footed. And like, as you mentioned, heavy-footed, really just not able to like, well, not that he's not able to, but just like he's not really flipping hips. He's not really being like aggressive with his feet and trying to stay light and active with that. And it's funny because like I'm doing this write-up right now on Jaime Jaquez, and like I'm watching Jaime Jaquez and I'm like, Jaime Jaquez doesn't have the lightest feet either. Like he is a little heavy footed and he does struggle against smaller guards, but he's got effort, you know, and like these quicker guards will, you know, get him off balance and he'll kind of go flying the wrong way sometimes. But because of his strength and his length and his IQ, he can guard up and do a good job against, you know.
That's the biggest difference. Like, yeah, like Jaime, it's the feel.
Yes.
You know, just like where to be positionally, how he's the anticipation of how he's got to move to kind of maybe if he is making up for that. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of stuff. And look, Jaime's a
senior.
He's a senior. Derek is an 18-year-old freshman coming back from an injury. So there's that to worry about. But at the same time, like at least, you know, again, going back to this AJ Griffin comp that people want to, you know, put on AJ, where people are like, oh, AJ was so terrible last year. And I honestly disagreed, you know, like big time. Not to say that AJ was great last year, but I thought that some of the like athletic plays, the agility that he was able to show, how well he was able to slide when he was doing it, and how much ground he covered with his body and his quick movement and his wingspan. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you haven't even really seen flash with Derek. A lot of Derek's good defensive possessions are him using his strength and his length up top. And I think Gregory Castillo in the chat makes a really good point. His upper body looks like it wants to move good, but his feet say, nah, fam. And I think that's a really adept point in that he's going to have to lighten up for sure. But a lot of it is just, he just has never really had quick feet. There's something about him, even in the high school level, where it was like there wasn't this inherent smoothness to the way that he moves on the court. Some guys glide, and those are the kind of guys that I really love and I get behind. Derek's not that, so he's got work to do. And look, you got to make quick decisions in the NBA. It's not just like, oh, I'm the low man and I could pack, you know, the balls on, you know, the wing. I could just stand in the paint waiting for the roll. Like, you got to get in and out in the NBA. There's a lot of different things that you're going to have to learn. It's going to be an uphill battle for him. I think, you know, fans are going to have to be really patient with him on the floor, because as good as he might be as a spot up shooter, and he might be coming in and knocks down a threes, and then he gets pulled, and a fan base is gonna be like, why the hell is Derek getting pulled when he's shooting so well? And it's like, well, because he's, you know, causing a ton of, you know, harmful possessions on the other end.
Now I'm with you, man. I think, just kind of going back to your original point, like, he's going to be a tough evaluation. I think, Corey, just if people are listening to this pod in its totality, like, we've kind of been all over the map too in terms of how we feel about him, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we've at times we're like, damn, look at this. And then the next moment we're like, the fuck are you watching? You know, like, it's such a wide variance in terms of like our reactions even to the tape. And I think that's why I sometimes don't envy NBA front office guys, because it's like, what do you do with a kid of this type of, you know, evaluation? And it reminds me a lot of Zaire Williams a couple years ago. Like, you and I, we did that pod and we were like, okay, this is nice, but also, what the hell is this? And that is going to be really tough. So good luck, NBA teams.
Yeah, Zaire kind of came to my mind as well. And I guess that comes back to the point of, well, where are you taking him? And if you want to say, I don't know, let's say, you know, the Nets have two picks back to back at 21, 22, and you want to take a shot at him there with one of your picks, I think that that's something that I could see being a good bet. But if, like, you're saying, like, I don't know, I can get Cason Wallace at 12, and I'm choosing between a guy like that and a guy like Derek, that's where things get tricky. Now, an interesting conversation is, like, does Nick Smith actually fit more into this Derek conversation rather than these lottery guys? But there are a lot of guys up top that, like, still have, maybe I have question marks, but at least I could see more potential in the, because there's a lot of questions with Derek that I'm not confident he's going to be able to answer. But there is a point in the draft where I go, all right, like, you could talk me into, you know, taking Derek. Now, I don't think I would go there, but you could talk me into Derek over a guy like Jordan Hawkins, who you're also going to be considering to be mainly a shooter, but doesn't necessarily have the same size as Derek. Now, I think Jordan Hawkins, the way that he creates shots off the ball is absolutely fucking bonkers. And it, you know, it puts him in a different stratosphere than a lot of these shooters. But I get the debate at that point.
Mm-hmm. But Corey, I also want to throw this in there kind of as like an aside, but also, like, we talked about Jordan Hawkins and we liked him better on the defensive side of the ball too. Like, as good of a shooter as he is, like, even on the defensive, and some of his off ball stuff, we're like, damn, look at the effort, you know, look at the energy here. So
So you know what? I didn't say it before, like earlier. We skimmed over it because you know, as Gregory says, the Duke Illuminati got me. You know, having me cut out a couple of times. But the when we go into the if you had $10 to invest in Derek segment, I was going to have Jordan Hawkins, Derek, and Colby Jones, because Colby Jones is like for a team, right? It's like safe guy, not super flashy, upperclassman, probably not going to be super exciting for your fan base if you draft him, where people are going to be like, Derek was on the board. Are you kidding me? We could have got Derek. He's 18. He's this five-star Montverde superstar. And that's when you start going like, well, maybe the smart franchise is actually taking Colby over him. Or maybe the injury stuff is real. People are going to overthink it. And Derek shows that he should have been a lottery pick down the line. That's a viable option too. And like you said, that's why front offices get paid the big bucks.
God, do you want me to answer the question with the $10?
No, because it's time for us to get into our comp. So if you're buying stock in Derek Whitehead, who may you have bought stock in previously?
This was one of the hardest ones I've ever done, Corey. Like I, just because of everything that we've said, I'm not going to repeat everything, but we are clearly even, we don't know what we feel about this guy. I put Jay Crowder as an example of what he may become. And the reason why I put Jay Crowder, it was like, okay, like what is Jay Crowder? He has become a veteran wing who, I think at this point in his career, the defense is a little overrated. The shooting is a little overrated, but at his peak was a 3-and-D high-end guy who played in a lot of big playoff games, offered a lot of toughness. I think if Derek can get the defense sorted to a certain level, then he could start to, you know, we could start to think about him in that type of role. And look, Corey, I don't think it's bad to compare him to a Jay Crowder type, because if somebody told you that you would get Jay Crowder's career back when he was drafted and you took him 25th, I think a lot of people would have signed up for that.
He'd have been a lot of, if you redrafted, exactly, he's a lottery pick.
Exactly. I mean, longevity, all that stuff. And he's played in so many big games. I just feel like this is not me being generous in terms of my comp for Derek, but I do feel like it could be an outcome for his career.
So I have three names and three outcomes. I think, you know, one of the things that Jay Crowder does have on him though is size.
Yeah, of course.
But ultimately that kind of role. Yeah. So the first name, whenever he dribbles, I can't help but to think of Lance Stephenson. And Lance was like a good play, had like good playmaker. Now I think Derek is a much better shooter, but oddly enough, I feel like they kind of shoot with similar form.
Yeah. I know.
You know? And Derek is going to have to prove that he can make these shots, you know, at the NBA level. So that was one. And I think both strong shooting guards, you know, should be physical guys. When Lance was like cooking, it might have been a little out of control sometimes, but it was kind of dangerous, you know. And if he can just be like a slightly tamed version of Lance, that's, you know, that's a guy who could be pretty good. Another name. Alec Burks.
I don't hate that. I like that one, actually.
It's like, it's not a
good player.
He's a good player. Like, good not player. Super sexy if you were like, hey, Derek Whitehead's going to be Alec Burks. But like, he's a guy that coaches like, you know, he could shoot it, could pass a little bit. Alec Burks, Knicks legend. Yeah. And then kind of the third guy, and this is more of role. Like shorter Michael Porter Jr.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's going to be bragging about Michael Porter Jr.'s defensive instincts, but the dude shoots the fuck out of the ball.
A lack thereof, but yeah.
You know, and like if Derek can play off of maybe not Jokic necessarily, but this, you know, a creator who's going to be setting him up for shots and looks, that could be valuable. And, you know, if you're talking about a guy who doesn't have the back issues, you know, maybe there's something there. So I don't know. It was a hard one to pin down, but I think there are a few different outcomes. Now, you know, notice I didn't say like James Harden, because like I just don't think that outcome is there for him. I don't think that high end superstar, probably even all star outcome is realistic. And I think that, you know, with a guy like Derek, maybe there's a point in the draft where you bet on the upside, but I think most front offices are going to approach it like, what is his median outcome and how valuable is that, at least higher up in the lottery? Like, is that worth taking if we miss?
Because
I think the Grizzlies are probably regretting going for the home run swing of Zaire when Trey Murphy was right there for the taking and did exactly what they wanted Zaire to do at this point.
I think, Corey, the comps that you came up with, and also like for me, I even thought of guys like Robert Covington, Josh Richardson, these types of guys too. And I think like, not one for ones, but you know,
prospect Josh Richardson's interesting.
Yeah, just because like, you know, like I don't think you and I are being too harsh in with these comps. Like I think it's very possible that he turns out to be that type of player. And then like, you know, my rebuttal to anyone who says that we're haters is that these are guys that are still in the league, still playing now, still collecting contracts and paydays. And I don't see how that's disrespectful. Like these are guys who played for a long time, have maybe not illustrious careers, but they've stuck around and they're still playing. And I think that means something too. You know, we're not saying that we think he's going to be a bust. We just don't think he's going to be James Harden. And I don't think that's a crazy thing to say.
I don't think so either. And with that said, it's time for you to sell me on Derek Whitehead. I'm an NBA front office. You have to sell me this pen on Derek Whitehead. You're banging the table. You're the guy who believes in him. Give me your best elevator pitch.
I love Corey so much because he never lets me get complacent. He always challenges me to be a better man. And so here's a big challenge for me. Here we go. Derek Whitehead. Hello, Daryl Morey. I'm here to talk to you about Derek Whitehead. And here's the thing. You know, he's a guy who struggle with injury his freshman season. He's a guy who, you know, is younger on the younger end at 18. He'll be like 18.8 years old. Don't know why we use the decimal points when we're talking about players' ages, but here we are. He's a guy who had to go through a bit of an adjustment, getting used to his new body and injuries and new setting and all that. But the baseline stuff is there. He's got a pure looking jump shot. When he can get his feet sorted, the jumper does look good, does look repeatable. He will be an option as a floor spacer for your NBA team. But he's also a guy that you're going to want to invest in, a guy that you're going to want to develop. You're going to want to put your developmental staff real close to him and next to him and working with him during practice, because he's got some potential. He's a guy who has some passing vision and feel to him defensively. We feel like he could be a guy that develops into a good to above average type of defender with the right type of coaching and, you know, discipline kind of getting in there. But overall, he's a guy that is worth a flyer when we're talking about the late lottery, early teens. Early 20s. He's a guy that you might want to invest in and see develop over the years because he's young. He's been through a transitional phase, but he's got some strong gifts that, you know, may turn out to be a really good NBA player.
You did it. You did it. And I think that's got to be the pitch for him, man. You know, like, has some tools.
Yeah.
He's very young. Dealt with a little injury.
Uh-huh.
Albert was so shook by his own sell me this pen segment. All right. Thank you for everybody in the chat watching live. Thank you for everybody who is listening on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. If you were listening on the podcast feed, make sure that you rate us. 5 stars would be dope. Share the pod. That's, you know, always helpful. Make sure you lock in tomorrow for Tyler and Tyler with the No Ceilings pod. You know, we're going to be back as always next week with another episode. We have a lot of really fun stuff planned for this entire draft cycle that we're excited about. It's heating up. It's March Madness. Shit, man. What a time to be alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a good time. It's a good time. And, you know, Corey, I will segue this into where you can find me. You can find me at Alberto Gim on Twitter is where you can find me. You can also find me on Instagram at GTGNBA. Shouts to Gregory Castillo saying that I deserve the Supermax for that Sell Me This Pen segment. At the end of it, I was going to say, do you guys want like a used car or a snake oil with that one on the side? But I really appreciate doing this pod. And it's a fun season. As Corey said, we have a lot going on tomorrow, or actually by the time this pod drops, my Jaime Hawkins Jr. Piece will be out. And I compared him to one of the characters on The Office because that's what I do. I like to get weird and I like to talk about random things. But I hope you guys enjoy it because Jaime Hawkins is a guy that I absolutely love. I think he's going to be an awesome NBA player. I don't think he's, well, like the conversation we had about Derek Whitehead, I think you have to kind of temper and recalibrate the role that you see him playing, and then you'll see the beauty in his game is the ultimate point that I made.
We love Jaime. We did an episode on him last draft cycle when we thought he could come out, but had to come back to UCLA to get that LA NIL money. But go to NoCeilingsNBA.com and subscribe so you get that delivered to your inbox. I wrote about Anthony Black this week on how he's, you know, kind of the ultimate connector in this draft, and those guys have gone really high over the last few drafts, and I think Anthony Black is going to be the guy who rises in the same vein this year. It's free. It'll get delivered to your inbox Monday through Friday. We got Paige writing now. It's the site's firing on all cylinders, man. So you can follow me at Corey Teleba on Twitter at NoCeilingsNBA on all the stuff. Until next time, we're out. Peace.
Peace.